Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing podcast, where I, your host, Katya Allison, get to explore the latest trends, techniques, and strategies in the world of marketing. Now, in today's episode, I sat with Landon Taylor, who is the CEO of Snowball, which is a word-of-mouth marketing platform designed specifically for home service companies. Now, with over a decade of experience in digital marketing and lead generation, Landon has a proven track record. Ooh, tongue-tied. He has a proven track record of helping businesses scale through powerful customer-driven strategies. Now, prior to founding Snowball, he spent 14 years building a review site to generate leads and reviews, which gave him valuable insight into the impact of word-of-mouth marketing. Now, Landon and I discuss the importance of balancing customer acquisition costs, better known as CAC, with the effectiveness of marketing channels. We explore how businesses can make smarter decisions in their lead generation efforts, focusing on optimizing CAC without sacrificing the long-term growth. Now, he shares actionable insights on how to use customer feedback and referral programs as key drivers of success, and why building a sustainable word of mouth driven marketing strategy is more crucial than ever. He also discusses the importance of diversifying marketing channels to really reduce the dependencies on platforms like Google. And we also learn how to evaluate the true value of each lead. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing. Landon, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. Very excited to have you on here because we're going to be digging into kind of balancing marketing efforts with customer acquisition costs, which I honestly don't think that we talk about enough. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Yes. So let's have our listeners get to know you a little bit. I've got my standard kind of questions. My first question is, what was your first marketing role? And it doesn't have to have marketing in the title. This one is always so interesting to see where people pinpoint. But what was your first marketing role?
Yeah. So going back to 2010, I was thrust into the affiliate marketing world.
Ooh.
From the time I was tasked with building an affiliate network, and I was absolutely new, had no idea what affiliate marketing was, what digital marketing was. And short story, I totally blundered my first few days, and the owner of the company came upstairs with four books, put them on my desk. He said, "You read every single one of these books before you do anything else," because I made a huge mistake. So affiliate marketing guy, I was like an affiliate manager type role.
What were the books?
It was like Affiliate 101. What is affiliate marketing, right? So just basic level stuff. The mistake I had made is, as an affiliate marketing network, you're the broker between advertiser and publisher.
Yeah.
And I had disclosed who our publishers were to our advertiser, which is a big no-no, right? You kind of defeat the purpose of being a broker if you disclose. And so
yeah.
Anyway, it was a learning experience, but that was my first role.
Yeah. Sometimes you gotta fail in that big way. You always end up we all have stories. Remember that one time? That's your battle scars.
Yeah.
Now, what is your current role?
So currently I'm the CEO and founder of Snowball. This is now my third company. So I've been an entrepreneur since 2010 up until this point.
Excellent. And what do you love about what you do? But before you tell me that, just know I'm going to ask you, with the good comes the bad, what could I pluck out, if anything, to make it just perfect? So let's start with the good. What do you love about what you currently do?
Yeah. So what I love about what we currently do is attributing directly the value that we can provide to good companies that treat their customers right. So we're a word of mouth marketing platform. So by nature of being word of mouth, you only are going to get new business if your customers are happy with you as a brand. I've been in the world of affiliate marketing, lead generation, where you're somewhat detached from the end user's experience, the customer, the consumer. Mm-hmm. You're just focused on the transactional drive leads that convert, right? Well, now we're in the business of helping great companies that treat their customers right grow from those happy customers. It's really a win-win-win type scenario.
I love that. Now, what, if anything, could I pluck out of your current role?
Oh, you know, running a business, there's a lot that goes into it from a, we're a bootstrap company. So everything from capital, strategy, lining up those things to make sure we can fund what we're trying to do. All that, some of the, sometimes the day-to-day stuff that's not towards growth, but still has to be done. So, you know, I'd say probably like just the operational minutia that if I can not have to worry about that, that would be wonderful. But it's got to be done and somebody's got to do it.
Someone's got to run the business. That's how you keep the lights on. Am I right?
It doesn't run itself. That would be awesome, but it doesn't.
When it comes to marketing, I find that you really do have to stay up to date with the trends, especially nowadays, because digital changes, I feel like every week, if not every single day, you have to keep up with those trends. Yeah. So how do you keep up with the trends? Is there a podcast, a book? Is it someone you follow? Is it a newsletter? How are you keeping up to date to ensure that you've got the right strategies?
Yeah, for us, we have, you know, clear ownership within the company of who is the domain expert for each area that needs to be focused on. So we have our go-to like SEO resident expert. They have their own publications or way of staying up to date, but combination of like following, you know, thought leaders on LinkedIn, making sure getting notified when new updates come out and consuming that. And then running the, you know, running it through the lens of how does this apply to us as a business? There's a little bit of like, there needs to be, a mentality and a commitment to always learning, right? Never being stagnant, right? And just making that commitment. And I think it's exciting, right? The ground is always kind of moving, which can be, you know, a little bit, unnerving, but it's exciting to learn new things and apply new things. You know, for years we were chasing the SEO algorithm at Google and trying to figure out what is it that they want to see. And that's a holy cow, talk about a always changing environment, right? That's a good example.
We're going to dive into your take on Google and its algorithm shortly. I will say, I think what I like is that you've got people who are focused on very specific things because there's so much out there. It's really hard to disseminate. And the other thing that I really appreciate that you said that I think that a lot of people miss is what does it mean to me?
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think that we as marketers are consistently reading things and it's like the information is in there, but what do I do with it? There's nothing, to me, there's nothing more satisfying than reading something and being able to take action in some way, shape, or form with that. I mean, like we talked about just before we hopped on the podcast, I told you I want everyone listening to walk away with one insight. I mean, like that insight can go such a long way. And I literally learn in every single interview. So I like that you focus it. And I like that you're focused on what does it mean to me?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's easy with all the information coming from different angles to have that paralysis by analysis where you're always, just when you're about to execute on something, you get a new piece of information and you're just constantly in this like paralysis to not take the next step and execute. So I think it's like a discipline, you know, it takes a little bit of discipline to be like, this is what applies to us and is the next best thing to do for our company. Everything else, we've got it noted, but we're not going to let it take us away from executing on the next best thing to do.
Yeah. Well, and then also a part of it too, sometimes you just got to experiment because so many things are changing. You have to be able to test it out. And I'm such a big believer that you can learn from your failures just as much as you can, you know, gain from your wins, right? Like you have to be able to balance those two and you have to be okay with the unknown a little bit. I always feel like you have to trust your gut. Like definitely your marketing foundation will inform what your gut feels like.
Yep. So
let's dive into it. We're here to talk about just kind of balancing marketing and the efforts that you have from the different tactics and the different channels with customer acquisition cost. And this may sound like such a basic question, but I always like to level the playing field to kind of kick things off. I'd love for you to explain CAC is what we'll probably end up saying, customer acquisition cost. And how is it calculated? What is it? And why do we care?
Yeah, great question. So in a company, there's two ways to look at it. You got your overall CAC, which is sales plus marketing, and those combined, how much does it cost to acquire a new customer? And then for the marketers in the world, there's your marketing CAC. How much does it cost from a marketing standpoint to generate a customer? So, you know, simple math, if you spend $10,000 on, let's say, a single channel, and you generate one customer from that channel, your marketing CAC is $10,000 per customer acquired. Then if you had your sales efforts, you'd combine the two, which is a horrible CAC.
That's a horrible CAC.
So maybe it's $10,000 and 20, you know, and then your marketing CAC is now $500. So you take your total cost divided by how many customers came from that spend, and that's your marketing CAC. If you're looking at it from a business standpoint, you combine the sales to get your overall CAC. And then the sister metric to CAC is LTV.
Yeah.
You can justify a super high CAC if you have a proportionate high LTV. You can also, if you have a really, really low CAC, but that channel has a really, really low LTV, it might not make as much sense as the other one that's a higher CAC.
Ooh, I love that you brought that up, because that was going to be my follow-up question, was how it's connected. But I am also curious, as I'm sure that the listeners are as well, when it comes to CAC, you did give, I don't want to say it was a horrible example, it was just a horrible CAC number of 10K. Have you found, especially in, because you are a bit of a serial entrepreneur, that there is a sweet spot that you're looking for, you know, that CAC?
Yeah, the sweet spot is more in the LTV to CAC ratio, right? Okay. So software, we're in kind of the scale mode. We're trying to, on the floor, hit a 3-to-1 LTV to CAC. And we want to get it eventually to a 5-to-1 plus, but we're willing to take a smaller margin while we're scaling. So, you know, ROAS, right, return on ad spend is another way to look at it. So it's all relative to what that really should be the North Star metric, is what's your ROAS or what's your LTV to CAC ratio. Because again, a high CAC may have a better ROAS than a low CAC channel. So I would say, so in terms of like across industry or just in general, for software, 3-to-1 is like a LTV to CAC ratio we're looking at. And then ROAS, you know, when we were running, so in our previous two companies, Skyrocket Media was more like a digital marketing agency, and then bestcompany.com was a review site that generated high quality leads through SEM traffic. And in those cases, you know, we were always going after like a 4X.
Yeah.
ROAS kind of on the low end. And so, you know, anyway, that's what I would normalize to is the LTV to CAC or the ROAS metric.
So let's kind of double click into just marketing CAC, right? As opposed to just the overall business. As you mentioned LTV, which is, you know, the lifetime value, return on ad spend, ROAS. What other metrics should I be looking at as a marketer that kind of feed into CAC as well too? Because I do feel like, maybe it's just me, I doubt it, but like I sometimes feel like I can get inundated by so much data because I've got it coming from all sorts of channels, right? So like what other kind of key metrics do you hone in on to really help you balance out that CAC or inform the CAC?
Yeah. So if you zoom out and take a look at the funnel that informs your LTV and your CAC, there's really kind of three main levers in my mind. It's what is your cost? What is your conversion rate? From initial interaction to conversion, and then what's your average order value? Like, how much is somebody paying or buying from you? So you know, in Google Ads, for example, that's your conversion value over cost. You know, and we'll probably get into this, but I think maybe reading between the lines for the listeners. Until you have a solid foundation of data to where you can actually close the loop from click to conversion, and even better, beyond to LTV, like how long are they staying on? Until you can close that loop and have clear line of sight on every channel, it's hard to do anything more, right? Because you're just falling blind. So I would say start with solid data, clear line of sight, and then focus on those main levers. What is my cost? What's the conversion rate? And then what's my average order value that I'm generating from those clicks? And that'll give you your conversion value over cost metric, right? That's basically your ROAS.
Do you ever feel like people rush to, because yes. I hear what you're saying. Like, until you know this, you don't know what else you can do. But I always find it's like, let's we gotta feed them with money. All of these different channels, because we need leads. So like, honestly, I have to ask you as a business owner, how do you balance those things out? Because that makes sense on paper, but the reality is that you need to get those leads. And maybe it leans into just kind of the experimentation of it. I don't know, but like, how do you balance that out?
Yeah. So it's really easy if the conversion loop is really quick. So take like e-commerce, right?
Yes.
They click and they make a transaction within minutes. We're in the world of like, we generate a marketing qualified lead, sales has a call, a demo needs to be held. And then there's a sell cycle of weeks beyond that. Right.
Yes.
So in that case, like it would be asinine for us to be like, okay, your clicks have to convert to customers, right? And you have this budget, no experimentation. So how we reconcile that is we say, listen, let's align on optimizing to something early on in the funnel.
Yeah.
Like lead, right? We're just optimizing to leads right now. And we're going to get it to a certain level of threshold and volume of data that we can actually make decisions and analyze the data well enough.
Yeah.
And then once we have that cohort built up enough, then see, okay, how does that bake to the next stage, right? Demo held. And just slowly phase in that way. So it's not like, hey, you have $10,000 to go get customers, right? It's like, no, you have $10,000 to get the best source of MQLs, right?
Marketing. Yes.
So anyway, like the time element is important. And speed to data needs to be in line. And everybody needs to be aligned who's investing the money, who's running the campaign, all that stuff.
I am obsessed with your response because I think that so often we want that bottom of funnel. And like, that's a lot of pressure to put on that one little lead that's coming in. And it feels little when you put that amount of pressure, no matter how juicy it is. And then I think like, as a marketer, I have to evaluate the types of leads that I'm even providing. Like, you know, let's say, and we'll dive into Google. So let's start there, right? Let's say I dive into Google and that's a marketing channel that I want to start with. And I've got, you know, leads coming in on such a consistent basis, but maybe they're crap leads. Like maybe they never get to demo.
Yeah.
I want to know that information that I can correct, right? Like whatever it is I'm doing, maybe Google isn't right for me and you have to be able to evaluate that. So like, that's why I'm obsessed with what you're saying.
So one thing too, like, especially if you're generating leads for, well, whether it's for your own company or for somebody else, is making sure you understand what their CAC threshold is. So I'll give you an example is when we own bestcompany.com, we would generate leads and we'd sell them off to a company that the consumer said, I want to talk to them, right?
Yeah.
And anytime somebody was buying leads from us initially, they'd give us a really kind of street level payout, run of the mill, right? And it was just a basic level payout.
Yeah.
It was super important for us to know, okay, we're starting here, but what's the ceiling of where we can get to in terms of payout if our leads are converting, right?
Yeah.
So we would then say, okay, make sure you give us line of sight on how our leads are performing. And then if we're performing at a certain level, raise our payout commensurate to that conversion.
Yeah.
And so we would run unprofitably for sometimes the first $100,000 or the first 6 to 12 months. But we knew what the potential was. And as soon as we got there, it would unlock profitability overnight. So it's alignment across all the stakeholders in the funnel.
Yeah.
It can't just be this myopic view of, I need to just generate leads. You got to know how those converting, right? What's the LTV on those? And factor all that in.
I love it. Just preaching to the choir. Let's dig into Google because you definitely have thoughts and opinions on Google. So I want to kind of dive into it. I believe that your take is that Google is a bit manipulative. So talk to me a little bit about that. What do you mean by that? And mind you, I don't disagree. I'm sure that a lot of listeners won't. But tell me why you think that. What is it that you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, the preface here, it's a love-hate relationship with Google. I've built businesses off the back of Google Ads, and I've also almost lost businesses on the back of Google Ads. So Google's motto was don't be evil, right? Like their motto, by how they structure their platform, is very much like, we're going to make this even more of a black box to increase the dependency that marketers have on our platform. It's from a purely business standpoint, like growing value in the business. It's a smart move, right? Like create dependency, make it a black box. And so with that, it's like the algorithm, you know, is you're always chasing. They at the wave of a wand with policy changes, they can put companies out of business that are otherwise great businesses.
Yeah.
And then from the, on the paid search side, like they almost forced marketers to rely on their, it's called target ROAS, where you have to basically have them do the bidding for you. You give them the data, they do the bidding. And so everything is just more like, instead of it being a platform, it's like, we're going to empower brands to market and still uphold the quality of search for the consumer. It's been more like, we know we're so big, we don't really care as much about the brands, and we're just going to take the highest bidder. You know, they're going to buy from us because we're so big. So where I kind of came to in all that was, you just can't have a dependency on Google for the growth of your business. It's always going to have a place. It's always something you could turn on or turn off, but you have to have other things, other channels that are part of a holistic strategy, so you're not dependent on Google, because they can put your business out of business overnight.
Yeah. So what does that mix look like?
Yeah. So great question. It's paid media. So you got the other platforms, Facebook, Bing, TikTok, affiliates, right? If you have a partner program or a strong affiliate network, leaning into that. And then, of course, I'm super biased here, but once you get customers from your leads, having a systematic flywheel for word of mouth, referrals from your happy customers, UGC from your happy customers that feeds the social proofing of your brand throughout the buyer journey, whether that buyer journey is from a Google ad, whether it's a buyer journey from somebody typing on Google your brand and researching you organically. So a strong word of mouth flywheel. Now you have to have customers first before you can accelerate the flywheel. But once you have a flow of customers, you know, don't just allow them to come in the front door and then leave the back door and you don't see them again, right?
Yeah.
Have this flywheel that helps you grow from your happy customers.
So I have a couple of questions, and I don't want to lose them. And they pertain to kind of what you said. The first thing is from the different channels that you mentioned, do you find that there are some that are better for lead generation as far as like not just top of funnel, maybe more of like the middle of funnel? Actually, I'm not even articulating that well. What I want to ask you is, do you find that some marketing channels are better at lead gen versus nurturing, right? Or like, is there a sweet spot that you're like, yes, I mean, like definitely you should do Facebook ads?
Yeah. It's a good question. So I've been in the affiliate world where it's pure performance based. I've been in the pay PPC where it's arbitrage, you're paying for clicks and then make your money on the conversion. Of course, PPC, the platforms are so robust now that you can do remarketing, you can do straight lead gen. And it is more like a holistic approach. You want to kind of have a little bit of everything. Affiliate though, you know, and some of these other pay for performance, I mean, in terms of like the cash flow and aligning when you get paid and when you pay out,
it's
cleaner in that way. Quality is not normally as good as people that are going through a research funnel on Google. So I don't know. I mean, I don't have a direct answer for you there. But I guess the only takeaway I would say is just diversify. Mm-hmm. Don't go all in on one thing. If you are going to go all in on one thing, go all in on something you can control completely. which in my opinion is the word of mouth flywheel. But have the other stuff be the fuel to feed and grow your customer base, and then have your word of mouth flywheel be what you have. It's just a steady something you can count on, that you control your own destiny of.
So let's unpack that word of mouth. And I view word of, well, I like that you said, you know, you have to have a customer first before there is that word of mouth. And what I often think is that brands are so focused on getting the conversion that they forget the completely other side of the funnel, which is that customer marketing side, and making fanatics out of them, which to me is the word of mouth. So how is word of mouth different than influencer marketing?
Yeah. So they can be one and the same. If the influencer is your customer, it's one and the same, right? So word of mouth, the way we think about it is really three R's: referrals, reviews, and reputation marketing, also known as social proofing, right? Uh-huh. And so the way we approach it is like the pillars to a good word of mouth flywheel is that you're talking to every single customer on an ongoing basis, on a one-to-one basis, which is hard to do, right? You're the representative. If there's a sales cycle, the representative doesn't have time to follow up with every customer, right? They're focused on getting new deals. Customer support is focusing on resolving issues, right? So it's like this white space that doesn't fall directly on anybody's plate, but is super fruitful. And so the reason we created Snowball is it's a done for you platform that does that important work, but does it for you, because the other stakeholders in your business are busy doing other things. So it's consistent outreach. You've got to earn the top of mind.
Yes.
And then having a referral program that's easy, makes it easy for people to refer. It's easy to understand the referral program. And then they have confidence that when they refer people, they're going to be treated well and they're going to get their reward. So you got to build their confidence in the program. And then what's beautiful about this conversation engine to get referrals is, in by doing so, you identify who your advocates are.
Yes.
And that's where you can then get the UGC. You get the review from them. You get the video testimonial, the befores and afters. And that UGC can then feed everything else you're doing, because it increases conversion in those funnels. So it all comes down to this like one-to-one conversation with each customer on an ongoing basis to then get those things that you want from the happy customer.
So in talking about that one-to-one, because when you were describing it, I immediately went to, well, that's why so many brands are starting to really invest into community, so that they have like that consistency, like, let me consistently give you value in like a month, on a monthly basis, whatever this looks like, whether it's like absolute engagement online, or if it is a newsletter, whatever it is, there's something, or there's consistency with driving people to something. But you're talking about one-to-one conversations. Is that what you guys foster automatically?
That's right. Yep. So as soon as a new customer is minted in a company, they would get an outreach over SMS and email introducing Snowball's the assistant to the rep they worked with, or the assistant for the company. And then that's an evergreen conversation, checking in every few months, even to the point where if they say, hey, I can't think of anybody right now, but my brother's moving into his house in 2 months. Can you reach back with me then? Our engine would reach back out in 2 months, specifically about that context. Because what you want, these people want to feel like they're being talked to, and really only them. Like, they want to feel like they're an advocate for your brand.
Absolutely.
And it takes time to kind of build that trust with them. A community is a great step, absolutely, because it's another way to stay top of mind.
Yeah.
But most people, the best in class is like maybe one or two texts after the job is completed, or a customer, new customer's generated, and then that's it. Or maybe like a drip sequence, a newsletter.
Yeah.
But you know, it's easy to feel like you're just part of this big crowd as a customer if that's the only engagement you're getting.
Oh, absolutely. I love this idea of having continuous dialogue with customers, because again, like it does drop off. And especially if you're in software, I mean, you could get the deal, but if someone doesn't actually use your software, when it comes down to, I know this because this has happened in every company that I've been in. If I don't use it, I cut it.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and there is value in continuing the conversation. And I love the vendors who consistently are like, I've booked time. This is what I'm thinking about. I thought that this would be good. Sometimes it's annoying, but also I will tell you this, I have a folder where I save it. Cause I'm like, I can't even handle this right now, but I'll always go back to the folder because they are sending me something that is crafted because they, for me,
yeah,
because right. they've heard what I'm trying to do. Right. Like, and I think like, if you can balance it out with like, hey, these are, you know, Katya's priorities are this, and this is the stuff that would be the most meaningful, whether it's content or, you know, webinars, I don't even know how to use a certain aspects of it. Right. So that absolutely makes sense. Now, and in looking ahead, what kind of trends do you see kind of coming up in digital marketing that we should all be keeping our eye out on?
Yeah. So, and this may be somewhat biased, but I don't think so. Even if I wasn't working at Snowball, is the interplay between UGC and paid marketing. What I mean by mm-hmm. that is this, is you think about it, we all go buy clicks at Google to get yeah. somebody who's in the research phase to buy our product. Well, they likely have a neighbor or a friend who has used a similar product, right? And everybody, yeah. if their friend tells them they used it and they trust it, that trumps any and all validation. Mm-hmm. Right? So allowing companies to unlock this groundswell of UGC, not solely for the purpose of social proofing, but also to engage their customers as micro influencers or micro affiliates of their business, and doing so in a systematic way. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's the next trend of, I'll give you an example, is let's say you got from a happy customer a video testimonial, right? Well, on social media, you can do collaboration between that customer and the brand.
Yep.
The brand could then remarket to anybody who engages with that collaboration post. That's now feeding very targeted and intentional paid media to the network of your customers. So it's this interplay of UGC and informed paid media from that UGC.
Do you think that marketers are built in a way nowadays where they can see that kind of like web that we weave? Because I think oftentimes we execute tactics versus seeing how all of the dots are connected so that they all work together. And I don't know, you know, well, I didn't just graduate last year, so I don't know what it is that they're teaching, but like, I do kind of wonder if like that's even being taught on from a digital marketing perspective, right? Like, you got to connect the dots. It's not just knowing how to execute email, knowing how to ask for a review, knowing, you know, how to run a Google ad. It's not just those things. They all kind of have to work together in order to like move people down and then through.
Well, you think about it this way, if you're running paid media and you have a budget, right? And you have your North Star metrics, if you need to generate X amount of leads at this cost per lead. Those decisions are being informed by downstream dots that somebody in the business, your CMO, your CEO, or whoever, are trying to connect themselves. Well, as a marketer, if you can empower yourself with understanding those dots and you figure out how they're interconnected, you'll have a superpower, right? You'll be so effective in your role because you understand that A leads to B and to C versus I'm just operating in the silo that's being, you know, mandated from somewhere above. So yes, if you understand the whole, you're that much more effective in your specific role.
Love that. I've got one final question for you to wrap it all up in a bow for us. And that is, if you knew then what you know now, what's the marketing or non-marketing advice that you would give to yourself? And you get to choose.
Yeah. Ooh. Marketing advice would have been diversify sooner, experiment more aggressively, and not get drunk on the Kool-Aid. What I mean by that is Google was so frothy for so long for us.
Yeah. That
you know, I think relative to most companies, we still were pretty experimental, but I wish I would have just always thought in my mind, let's assume that's not going to be there forever. Let's plant other seeds. Let's create other opportunities that maybe we can't reap yet, but that we can eventually, so that if something that's out of our control impacts us, we have other stuff that's already been nurtured and building. And so experiment. And then also too, like ever learning and trust in yourself as a marketer, don't get stagnant, right? Always learning, always trying to find out different ways to sharpen your saw and expand your skill set.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, especially like the whole don't put all of your eggs in one basket. It is so true. And I know it's really tough to hear and like absorb and take action on, because if something's working, this fear of like, but this is working. But what if one day it didn't? Then what?
Yeah, right. And it is like the balance. You don't always want to be the rabbit jumping from one thing to the next. Yeah. But once you got something going, it's going well. Well, and you have time, right? Because things are just running. Yeah. Figure out what that is, that next thing that you can make, you can build into something special as well.
Love that. I cannot thank you enough for all of the knowledge that you shared today. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast.
Thank you. Sharing your insights. Thanks.
Welcome back. I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. I'm ready to dive into my key takeaways. The first one is CAC management is part of the job marketers. During our conversation, we talked about the importance of understanding customer acquisition costs, also known as CAC, within marketing campaigns. On one hand, generating leads is crucial. On the other hand, analyzing the associated costs and their impact on the overall business sustainability is equally as important. CAC involves a very comprehensive analysis that includes not only the cost, but also the quality of those acquisitions through the various channels. He really talks about the need for a strategy that balances expenses with customer lifetime value, right? Ensuring that each marketing dollar spent is an investment toward a profitable growth. So in essence, it's not just about that one lead and calculating that cost of one lead, but it is over the cost of the entire lifetime of that particular customer. Was it worth the investment? So we always have to have these things top of mind. Loved that we talked about that. So my key takeaway number two is customer marketing equals customer engagement. We talked about fostering ongoing relationships with customers to really kind of build a resilient marketing framework. This, in a nutshell, is customer marketing, which in my opinion is something often forgotten in companies, but is such a vital part of the success of a company, whether we call it customer marketing or not. A great example of this in action is Landon's word of mouth flywheel, where active and satisfied customers really promote the brand through their networks. Sure, it amplifies marketing efforts, but also it enhances customer loyalty and the overall brand reputation. One of the ways to successfully execute this authentically, that's the key, you know, it's always the key, it's authenticity. But one way to execute this authentically is to be committed to a long-term engagement through regular communication and providing opportunities for really customers to connect and share their experiences. What you get out of this flywheel is UGC, user-generated content. This is content customers create. Think reviews, think pictures, think sharing their stories. That can be incredibly powerful. This is when customers become your advocates. And the beauty is that oftentimes, this is the content that resonates the most with your audience. Okay, my final key takeaway is, don't put all of your eggs in one basket. This should go really without saying, but it's worth saying it every time it comes up. Diversify your marketing tactics and your channels. That doesn't mean that you have to do something new each time. You don't have to reinvent the wheel, but it does mean that you don't want to put all of your budget in one channel or double down on one tactic just because it's working. You want to be really strategic. And I know this can be hard. right? But it does protect you in the end. So much of what we do as marketers in digital marketing is really being able to stay up to date on the trends and being able to diversify, or needing to diversify, is what is going to protect you in the end, because things change, right? Things change in digital marketing. So when you diversify and things do change, you are basically preventing like this disruption to the atmosphere that's kind of affecting your success. Now, there should also always be a healthy balance of testing and learning so that you find the gems of success. Thinking and acting in this way allows you for a much more balanced marketing portfolio where the risk is kind of spread and there are more opportunities for innovation, right? Now, what did you take away from today's podcast? I want to hear it. Let's keep this conversation going. A special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Ike. And thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic, but grounded in reality. This is Katya, signing off.